We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
This is WSV, the Solid Verbals Friday News Broadcast. My name's Ty Hildenbrandt. My co-host, as always, Dan Rubenstein. You give us a download, we will give you the world. Don't forget, this show brought to you in part by our Patreon over on verballers.com, verballers.com. Go and check it out. Become a premium or certified verballer today. Also, as many of you are listening to this on a Friday, don't forget to go on out to solidsaturday.com. That is the address for our Saturday morning live stream. It is free for all. It is on our YouTube channel. While you're over there, please do hit subscribe and like. And last but certainly not least, solidgiveaway.com. Enter now for your chance to win an RG3 signed mini helmet. Just a few short steps, free steps that you need to go through in order to get your name in that hat. Also, please do subscribe on Apple Podcasts if you haven't already. All that stuff helps us out tremendously. Dan Rubenstein, how are you today, fine sir?
I'm great, and I should point out that it's only a mini helmet unless you have a tiny head. Then it's just a regularly sized helmet that you can wear that RG3 has signed.
At this hour, playoff outrage. Well, sort of. The playoff committee dropped its latest set of rankings on Tuesday evening, which raised some eyebrows. And in the bigger picture, the NCAA released a draft of a new constitution. What does it all mean? Let's ask our guest of honor. His name is Ari Wasserman. He is the affable national college football reporter for The Athletic. You can also hear him on the Andy Staples Show. Last week went 7-2. In picking college football games. Ari Wasserman, welcome to the show. I wonder, compared to some of the other things that you've done over the last year, moving, getting married, having a child, where does going 7-2 in week 10 rank for you personally?
That was really good, but the best thing was actual real life money in gaming North Carolina at 6-1 odds to win the Wake Forest game when they were down by 17 in the third quarter.
You got 6-1 on that.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, because there was nobody was stopping anybody. So to get three stops, it might as well have been 10-1.
Depending on what you bet, that might take care of half of your wedding cake. That's
it
great.
It was enough for it to be good, but it wasn't enough to take care of a wedding cake a friend of mine spent $2,500 on his wedding cake, which is insanity. And then you were talking to me earlier about bands. Those are 10 grand. So like what I should have upped, if I knew the result, it would have been more money.
Yes.
But that's not the way life works.
The least important bites of wedding eating are the cake.
Why are they $2,500? Just let's go get a few dilly bars, stick a candle in it, and let's ride. I mean, like what?
I had a donut wall. I had a donut. Like you're preaching to the choir, singing to the choir, whatever the case.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, I'm really impressed by your guys' production. Like you guys, it sounds great. I know that I missed the, I don't know if we hear the beginning part, but the, if you want to be happy for a day, go eat a steak. You know, like that whole thing is great. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm happy to be back on. And yes. I'm a little upset that it took till November 11th, but yeah, you know, I'm happy that it also too is the most interesting time of the year. So thanks for having me on. And I'm excited to talk about football and maybe play a little grab ass.
Yeah. All right. It's the headline month. Let's get into it, Ty.
Being so you did so well last week, 7-2, do we have any locks that you'd be willing to share with us for week 11?
You know, week 11 is really, really difficult. Every week is difficult, and it's just like 7-2 probably means that you should fade me this weekend, you know, because regression to the mean and everything. I have two games that I really like, and I'd be curious. I'm actually kind of just dawned on me that you're a big Notre Dame guy. But like Virginia getting 5.5 to me is a very pleasing number on the road. They also have a very potent offense. I think their quarterback is going to be fine. I'm not 100% convinced that Notre Dame is going to lose that game, but I don't know that I would not take the points on the road 5.5. Is that offensive?
It's not offensive. I locked up Notre Dame minus the number on our show.
Okay. And what's your reasoning?
Yeah. My logic is that they know they're now sort of on the periphery of the playoff discussion. They've been playing better. It's a 7:30 game, ABC. I didn't see if that's a Herbie and Fowler game, but it's in primetime on ABC.
No, they're in Oxford, I believe.
Okay. Either way, it's pretty much Notre Dame's last real shot to make an impression with a national audience. And so I think given the fact that they've been playing better, they've been running better, it seems like the offense has stabilized out. I expect them to have a really big game on offense and not take their foot off the gas at all.
Yeah, Virginia, the over-under in this game is only 64.5, which probably is even a more attractive play.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that Notre Dame is going to be able to completely bottle up Virginia's offense, especially on a road environment. But like the thing with Notre Dame is, and again, I don't want to be offensive because I really like you, but I just don't know if Notre Dame is actually playing for a playoff spot right now.
And that's a fair point. That's a fair point. I mean, one of the things that I know Dan brought up on the last show that we did was when Brian Kelly reacted to the first batch of college football playoff rankings, as opposed to a lot of coaches who sort of play coy with it. He was like, oh, no, I thought we were too low. You know, like he came out and he was almost like openly championing Notre Dame as like potentially a team that could get its hat in the ring. I just think by virtue of the fact that their schedule down the stretch here isn't really that difficult. Teams in front of them have it much, much more difficult if you look at their schedules. As long as they keep winning, they're going to be in the hunt for this thing, and people are going to start talking about them.
If you look at Notre Dame's before the season schedule, Florida State, Purdue, Wisconsin, Cincinnati, Virginia Tech, USC, North Carolina, and then ending the year with a road trip at Stanford and maybe even Georgia Tech. They have a lot of like name brand teams that were supposed to be really good this year. And Notre Dame's schedule, it didn't do Notre Dame any favors because Wisconsin kind of fell off the map. And I know Wisconsin's kind of playing well right now, but it's not as much of a quality win as you would have hoped. North Carolina has broken my heart in terms of what I was expecting from them this year and what they are. Florida State fell apart. Purdue actually is probably a little bit better than we thought they were going to be. USC fell apart. Like if any of these teams were even 85% of what they were supposed to be this year, Notre Dame would probably be higher in the rankings.
But that being said, if you look at the strength of schedule of all the teams in the top 10, Notre Dame's in the 40s, believe it or not. And they're one of the stronger schedules that, you know, potentially could have their hat in the ring here. I'm not trying to advocate for them as a playoff team. I think they'd get drilled. But I'm only saying from a metric standpoint, the strength of schedule isn't as bad as it might appear looking at those teams.
But it's a hard schedule. I think it's a hard schedule. It might not be. It lacks the marquee win, but I think that's a hard schedule to go undefeated in.
It's a high floor. It's a high floor of a schedule. There's no like guppies on the schedule. Even like USC's down, North Carolina's down, but you're still talking about a USC team that has moved the ball this year and has maybe the best receiver in college football. And you're talking about a North Carolina team with Sam Howell, who's going to be a first round quarterback. And like, it's difficult. It's just disappointing given
expectations. It's the worst possible schedule that you can have because you're playing against teams that are all good enough on the right day to beat anybody. or to at least compete with anybody, but you don't get the marquee win on your schedule that you would need to convince the committee, because everybody can just say those teams are bad.
And even had they beaten Cincinnati, the reaction would have been like, wow.
Well,
Notre Dame should beat Cincinnati.
Cincinnati's almost losing to Tulane, you know.
Right.
Like, yeah. And it's just like, that's the thing, too. And I think that when the playoff inevitably expands to 12, I'm going to really miss these days, because I love discussing the playoff. I love, you know, theorizing and who should be in, who should be out. But I wonder, in a world where head-to-head is not going to matter, and it has already proven in one case it doesn't.
It doesn't, yeah.
That, like, if Cincinnati is actually a roadblock for Notre Dame, or if Notre Dame could hop them as an undefeated team at the end of the year if both teams went out. And it's just like, is Oregon a roadblock to Ohio State? In my opinion, if it's down to the last two, those two teams being the last to get the last spot, I would throw protocol out the window and give the team who won the game. Like, protocol is in place, in my opinion, to help guide us through the rankings. But if we have a one versus one for one spot, and they've played each other, then forget the protocol. Throw it out. Like, there's no better protocol in the world than winning in Columbus without your best player.
Yeah, I mean, it's overthinking it, right? It's overthinking it completely. If you,
I think protocol is overthinking it.
Yeah, it's.
But like, at the end of the year, do we actually believe that if Ohio State wins out and Oregon wins out and it's down to the last one, that Oregon's going to go ahead of them?
Yeah, I mean, if they're comparable, I think there is something to look. Losing to Stanford is less impressive than losing to Oregon. Right. If you're taking situations in a vacuum, obviously Oregon can't lose to Oregon, though I would argue Oregon lost to Oregon against Stanford, that there is value in weighing an entire slate. But if they're both 12-1 and they both have up moments and down moments, it just kind of makes sense to me.
Well, what do you think they will do? Like everybody has a different opinion. If you ask an Ohio State fan, they'll say, well, look, they beat Purdue, Michigan State, Michigan, and won the Big Ten championship game, and Penn State. Their schedule is completely, unequivocally better than what Oregon has done. I don't care if they lost to Oregon in week two. It doesn't matter. And then there's other teams or people that would say, probably you and people in Eugene and the Pac-12 that would say, why do we care about anything else other than what happened on the field when they played? And I would be in that category. I think head-to-head doesn't make sense in a case where that's the only metric when you're ranking 10 teams. But if you're discussing the merits of two and you have that data point should trump everything else. But in my opinion, I would put Oregon in if it were up to me. But what I think is going to happen is that Ohio State, if it's down to those two for the final spot, Ohio State will go.
Yeah, I mean, I could see both happening. Like, I'm not to sit on the fence here. The only thing that gives me a little bit pause about it, as down as Oregon has played to some opponents, is Oregon didn't trail against Ohio State. It wasn't a back and forth game. It was back and forth in that it was close and teams took turns scoring. Oregon didn't trail after a 0-0 in that game. They controlled the game. They ran all over Ohio State, and Ohio State threw it all over Oregon, but without Oregon's best player and without, I would say, a pretty good quarterback, Oregon still managed to beat Ohio State. And I don't know. I think it's worthwhile to consider that this wasn't a miracle comeback that relied on three pick sixes or something. Oregon controlled the game.
By the way, in order for that circumstance to come to fruition, we would need to have some crazy stuff go down in college football if Oregon and Ohio State are trying to kick it for number four. Because right now, the way things stand, just to recap, we've got Georgia, Alabama, Oregon, Ohio State in the top four, followed by Cincy, Michigan, Michigan State, Oklahoma, Notre Dame, Oklahoma State. So there are a lot of teams there in the back half of that top 10 that has some serious artillery on the schedule. Yeah, you know, Michigan's one of them, Penn State this week, and Ohio State last game of the year. Michigan State still's got some pretty big games. Oklahoma has two really big games here in the final 3 weeks. In order for, I guess, Ohio State and Oregon to be in that spot where
two things have to happen.
Yeah. I mean, Alabama probably needs to get booted, or maybe Georgia and Alabama play and Alabama wins close. Some sort of weird thing that keeps those two in the hunt. Or you've got a scenario in which everybody loses and maybe Oklahoma does amazing things and buoys all the way up to number two.
If Georgia loses to Bama in a close game, which we assume it would be if it happened that way, and Oklahoma wins out, you have two teams, Oregon and Ohio State, vying for the fourth spot. That's all that needs to happen.
Any other reactions to what we saw with the playoff rankings, Ari? The Michigan-Michigan State thing obviously has dominated the talking points here in the 48 hours since we saw batch two.
You know what my reaction is? The playoff show is completely designed to drum up the excitement. But I think it's impossible to do this without contradicting yourself. Like, if you tried to make your rankings right now and you did the Ty and Dan rankings and you wanted to go 1 to 10 without contradicting yourself, I don't know if you could do that, because somebody will say, well, if you do this, then why did you do that? There's no way to. Also, we'll all be happier if we just admit to ourselves and know that the committee is going to rank whoever they want to rank, however they want to rank them, based on whatever they want to do, and they're going to say after the fact why they didn't, and they're going to try to apply the protocols. And when they do that, there's going to be some contradictions, because there's no possible way to be completely in line with everything at every turn. And, you know, like, everybody is so outraged about the Michigan and Michigan State ranking, and, like, I get it. Like, one team beat the other, they're 5 and 6 or wherever they are. Why is Michigan State not ahead when they played a week ago? Like, I can see why that makes no sense. But the pragmatic person that I am is, who gives a crap? There's plenty of games left on the schedule, and they both basically control their own destiny to make the playoff anyway. Neither of them have played Ohio State. They haven't won the conference yet. And it's just like, whoever's the better team is probably still going to bear out at the end. And, like, you're not programmed to think that way, because we have to react and view each set of rankings every Tuesday as the last rankings possible. But, like, all this stuff is so murky and complicated, and it's designed to make us argue, which I love. And the fact of the matter is that none of it's going to matter in a month.
I hear you. But that's no fun. Because, on the other hand, when you say the pragmatic half of you says, okay, it's not going to matter at the end of the year, everything's going to play itself out. Of course it is. But also, if you follow Ari Wasserman on Twitter, which you should follow Ari Wasserman on Twitter, there is no bigger prisoner of the moment when watching football games than Ari Wasserman, because it's so fun when you watch Wisconsin go 3 and out 5 consecutive times against whoever, Notre Dame, Michigan State, I don't know, Nebraska. There's no bigger prisoner of the moment when Ari Wasserman says, I think Wisconsin should be disbanded. This is a national embarrassment. And I think that's more fun.
I am a reactionary person. I also have fun activities on Saturday that make me angry, which I need to control. But I also... You're right. Like, and, like, here's my reaction to this, and it's going to make people crazy. And I reacted to it on Tuesday. It's like, I don't want to be like, it doesn't matter whether Michigan State or Michigan are 5 and 6. It doesn't. But you know what? Michigan is probably better. I hate to say it. Anybody who watched the game, Michigan kicked their ass for 3 quarters. And, like, there was some weird things going on. There was a bad call. And, like, who do we actually believe is the better football team? And, like, that's the way the committee thinks. And, like, everybody in East Lansing wants to drive to my house and throw eggs at it. And I understand that. But, like, the better team isn't always the team that wins. Like, do we automatically assume that Arkansas is better than A&M? And then if that's the case, do we assume that Arkansas is better than Bama? Or do the worst teams win sometimes? And your reaction to that might be, well, why do we even play the games then? And it's just like, well, that's been a question in college football since 1905. So who cares? Like, the games are the games. Like, so if you're you also have to put yourself in the position of the committee too. First of all, the committee chair, Gary Barta, I feel bad for, because he's got to go on national TV every Tuesday and speak to very angry reporters for some reason about the way they ranked teams. And he might not even agree with the rankings. He's only one of the members. He's got to speak for 13 other people. There's 0% chance that you won't contradict yourself, because there's no formulaic way to do it. And at the end of the day, it's just like, who do we think is better? Oh, probably the 5 best teams with all the first round draft picks on them. And then everybody else will try to fend for the 4th spot. And, like, that's the way it works. It's not new. It's the same thing every year. And, like, debating who the 4th spot is the fun of the sport. And, you know, 5 and 6 is kind of an annoying thing. If you're a Michigan State fan and your team won a rivalry game, you want to continue to be ranked ahead, because it's like, even though Michigan lost the rivalry game, they're still laughing right now. And that really sucks as a fan. But also, if your team is actually good, the good news is that you're going to have a chance to prove it, and it's not the end of the world. But yeah, my take is that I think Michigan's better than Michigan State.
Yeah, and the thing is, though, Michigan State gets to feel disrespected. The fan base gets to feel disrespected, and that's the brand. It reinforces everything. It's good for everybody to be worked up, right? This is it, because it doesn't decide anything right now. I'm okay with it. I wish Gary Barta went full heel. I was like, I don't know if I believe in Michigan State. I don't like it. Like, just like throughout passive aggressive little moments in this, like, I think that would be amazing. Cause right now the show kind of stinks, right? It's just like this reveal and they're like, they're trying to say everybody's good and they're trying to parse everything. Like, go full heel.
I'm not trying to promote my own work here and I don't want to be that person, but I don't know if you guys saw this, but I wrote a story after the game or after the reveal called Translating Gary Barta, imagining what the College Football Playoff Committee chair wants to say. And I think it would be hilarious if he just, like, for instance, the question was, Oklahoma is ranked lower than the typical unbeaten team late in the season. The reasons are apparent, but I was curious whether the lack of schedule, the repeated close games, and the solitary game against Kansas is the reason for it, right? So just a regular question of why is Oklahoma rated so low? He goes, we can't pick one. And he lists all the names. Oklahoma's a good team. Caleb Williams is good, blah, 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 blah. But why didn't he just say, have you watched Oklahoma play this year? It struggled against Kansas. I'll say it again. It struggled against Kansas. We just don't think the current version of Oklahoma is good enough to beat any of the teams in front of it. So we'll use the lack of quality wins as the politically correct thing to say rather than they look like shit. Like, why? Like, that would be amazing if he could just say they look like crap. The lack of transparency is the thing that people hate about the committee the most. And the thing that they try to do is put on a show by being as closed off as humanly possible to explain their stuff. And it's just like, why doesn't Gary Barta, like you said, just come out and say, you know what? We know Michigan lost to Michigan State. It was a close game on the road. There was a controversial call in it that took a touchdown off the board. It was a nice win for Michigan State, which is why we still have that number six. But we believe in the committee's hearts, if they played on a neutral site next weekend, the Michigan would win. That'd be great.
Who could we elect as spokesperson?
Well, I was going to say, the problem is what we have is we have industry people who are trying to be nice, who are all non-talkers. They are all non-professional talkers. They are mouthpieces. They give press conferences, but they're not opinion people, and they're not descriptive people, and they're not personality people, and it makes the product worse.
So this year, you know, every year, I don't know if you guys know this, but they do a mock committee in Grapevine, Texas. And I got invited to do it this year. And the year they did it, or the day that they did it this year, was the day my baby was born. Mm. And like, I've been wanting to do this for 7 years now, because like, I feel like in that room, I would be just as animated as I am on the show with you right now.
And you, like, don't regret missing your baby's birth?
I wish I could have gone. Yeah, I'm going to go next year. But like, I feel like I'd be like, well, who do you think is, everyone's like, why is Alabama number two? They haven't beaten anybody. They lost to A&M on the road, and like, they don't have any reason for being number two. And it's like, that's probably true. But like, everybody knows in their heart that Alabama is the second best team in college football because they're freaking Alabama. And they do it every year. They've got more draft picks than any other team in the country besides Ohio State and Georgia. And they aren't going to lose to Michigan State or Michigan or any of the other teams that you think deserve to be up there. So just say it. Alabama has deserved the benefit of the doubt because they've got the greatest coach of all time. They're built like an NFL team, and they're probably going to kick your favorite team's ass.
What has been your, I don't know, have you looked at the season having a theme? Is there any sort of overriding through line that you see with the season? And we've talked about it a bunch of like, hey, there aren't a lot of killer offenses and quarterbacks, right? Like, you look at the top of the sport, it's backups, it's teams led by defense, it's disappointing offenses that were expected to be better. Obviously, the Clemson thing has been the biggest highlight of that idea, and just having, I think it actually, I looked at this, in points per drive, Clemson has the worst scoring offense in the ACC. Is that a thing to you, or is it just like a cyclical element to the season? What stands out to you as like, here is what the 2021 season is defined by?
That's an interesting question, and I don't know if this is a good answer, but I'm going to say it. I feel like you have Georgia, and then you have 10 teams in the middle there that are all the same. Or like, even if you put a few at 2 and 3, I think teams 4 through 9 are like the same. Like, at the time when the Big Ten had 5 teams in the top 11, and it's like, we have to try to distinguish between Iowa, Michigan State, Michigan, and Penn State. And it's like, actually, they're all the same. And it's like, is Oklahoma that much better or even better at all than Notre Dame? Is Notre Dame absolutely better than Michigan? Is Cincinnati 100% better than Oklahoma? Is Oklahoma that much better? By the way, that's another play of mine this weekend. I'm taking 5.5 Baylor points at home against Oklahoma, because if a team tries to tell you who they are, I think at a certain point it's time to believe them. It's just like, it's just one really great team. Like, when's the last time in a college football season on November 11th that everybody was basically certain who was going to win the national title? And it's like, if Georgia doesn't win the national championship this year, that'll be the biggest Georgia move of all time.
Let's stop there. Are you that certain in Georgia?
I am, yeah. Their defense is insanely good, and I think that their offense is better than people give it credit for.
Yeah, their offense is really good. The problem with their offense is it's really good, but I worry a little bit. Like, sometimes you watch Stetson Bennett, you're like, oh, that's a pretty good quarterback. But, like, Stetson Bennett against Nick Saban with a month? Like, that to me is the issue where, like, I think you can beat Georgia 17-13 with a month to prepare if you
I think
have
that's possible,
an offense
yes.
with an RP. So what I come down to and alluded to this and made reference to, like, if I were to say this team's offense is, I don't know, they're weirdly not where they should be. That's describing teams like 2 through 20, is it not?
I agree, yes.
Like, even Ohio State's offense, like, it's weirdly not where it should be, right? When you watch them week to week, you're like, huh, they make, you know, Ryan Day gets a little too conservative weirdly. And like CJ Stroud, just he'll make like four great throws in a row and then three duds and like rolls into the pass rush.
You just like want to grab the coach's head and go, what is wrong here? You
yeah.
know? Like, yeah.
But like that, you look at Oregon, you look at Oklahoma, you look at Notre Dame, you look at all these teams, you look at, I mean, at least A&M has an excuse, I guess. It's their backup quarterback. But you're like, huh, this offense is like 71% as good as it should be.
I think that's probably a more apt way of saying what I said. The thing that I would do, I guess, if I were on the committee, and I guess people who know anything about me know that, like, I would lean heavily on how these teams are built because I think that matters. But like, of the 12 teams, going all the way down to 13 Baylor, which teams in your heart would you pick that would be most likely to beat Georgia this year? And it's like, if you pick those teams, mine would be the obvious ones that you would pick, Ohio State and Alabama, because they're similarly built. That's how I would try to rank them, but that's not fair. So it's just like this like weird dynamic between deserving and best. Like, who do you think in your heart is the best? Who in your heart do you think is most deserving? It's like Oregon is 100% more deserving than Ohio State to go. And anybody who debates that is a liar or an Ohio State fan. But who do you think is better at football this year as a team?
I actually do think, and I know this flies against recent performances, I think Cincinnati is interesting in that regard, in that they can beat Georgia 13-10. I think they have the defense to, right, like they keep it close in the bowl game last year. But I think if you are able to run and attack an offense in the way that Cincinnati at their best can, I think it makes it more interesting than Oregon's defense or Ohio State's defense, or, I mean, Alabama's defense is obviously a good answer there, but like you start looking down the rankings and, you know, maybe A&M is interesting in that regard, but like Cincinnati with time to game plan against Georgia's offense, I'm not fully out on the Bearcats.
Yeah. And the thing too, is that it's a shame, but we're never going to see that. Like, we can play the game. We do it every year. You fall back into the trap. And if there was ever going to be a year where Cincinnati was going to be in the playoffs,
this would be the year, right?
How could it be this year? If it doesn't happen this year, it's never, ever going
to
happen.
No, this would be the year. One thing I brought up to Dan on the show that we did on Wednesday, as opposed to some of the old conjecture around Boise State, remember, they were ranked very highly in years gone by. And the question was always, well, can they really compete with so-and-so? Can they really compete with, you know, Oklahoma, right? I don't feel like you can ask that question with a straight face about Cincinnati this year. Like, you can ask it, but are we really going to sit here and say, yeah, we don't think Cincinnati can go toe-to-toe with a Michigan or an Oregon or even an Alabama? Like, it feels...
And the thing, too, is...
Yeah.
Not to interrupt you, but last year, the national champion beat the crap out of Ohio State so badly that it was starting to be like, are we going to put a running clock on this thing here?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, most years, the best team in college football that emerges as the best, the answer to that question is everybody can't play that well against them because they're the best. So like if you lump Cincinnati into a thing of, oh, they would probably lose to Georgia by 25. And it's like everybody who plays Georgia this year is getting their butts kicked. So Cincinnati is just on par with the other teams that you're comparing them against. Just because they're not good enough to beat the best team in the game doesn't mean that they aren't more likely or more deserving or better to go to the playoff and get their shot as opposed to whatever other marginal team they're being compared to because they're just not in the Power Five. So like an undefeated team too, I don't care what conference you play in, going undefeated is hard. It's just hard. And if you lose a game, I think that you deserve or you lose the right to have the benefit of the doubt. So if you've lost and you don't make the playoff, you might feel like, hey, you know what? We were one of the four best teams, but you lost. And that's part of the game. So if you lose and you don't get in, why don't you throw undefeated Cincinnati in there? And if they lose to Georgia by 30, how's that any other different, any different than every other semifinal we've watched the last 5 years?
Right.
How many of the semifinal games end in blowouts? Like 80% of them?
It's a Midwestern tradition. Get blown out in the playoff. There's no reason Cincinnati can't be that next Midwestern team to get blown out in the playoff.
But it's like even Clemson got blown out by Ohio State, and then Ohio State got blown out by Bama. It's a sport of blowouts. Why are we afraid of it?
While we're talking about Ohio State, I wanted to get your reaction to something Dan said on a recent podcast. So we know we've got a huge game in air quotes here this weekend as Purdue tries to knock off a third top five team this season, an incredible feat by any measure. But Dan's point was, all right, let's look at Purdue. Purdue just got ranked for the first time in the college football playoff rankings. Their losses are not bad losses. You could argue they've got the best wins of anybody in the country. What happens to their playoff ranking if they beat Ohio State this weekend? What should happen to their playoff ranking?
Oh.
In Columbus.
I think that they would be a top 10 team.
I'm totally with you.
I don't know if they would be. I think that they should be. Here's what I said on the Ohio State podcast that I do with my co-host, Bill Landis. This is the first time that I can't remember a single time that Ohio, if you took the two best players on Ohio State's team and you took the two best players on the other team they're playing in the Big Ten, that you would take the two best players on the other team. That's never happened before.
George and David Bell? George Karlaftis and David
Bell?
Would
you take both of those guys, or would you take Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson, which are Ohio State's two best players? I mean, we're talking about, you know, I think that David Bell is probably the third best receiver in that category, but as a package, you'd probably take the game-disrupting defensive end in conjunction with a very good David Bell. And it's like Ohio State is never in a position where they're playing a team where their two best players are either better than Ohio State's two best players or at least comparable in the sense that it's a discussion. So like to me, this is a 20-point spread, and maybe it's one of those weird spreads where Ohio State will just cover like 42-17 because everybody's going to probably take the points this week. But like if Purdue beat Ohio State on the road, because, like, I mean, I that would be a legitimizing win, but, like, I'm probably the number one most hated person in Big Ten media because, like, I never give these teams the credit that they feel like they deserve when they're unbeaten. It's like I'm the guy on the podcast saying that Michigan State sucks before they lose. And, they're Penn State, Michigan, and Michigan State are so indistinguishable to me that I can't possibly believe that they're any good. And it's just, like, it bears out that way. Every year, it's the same thing. They're just they look good, and you deserve some credit for going to 8-0. But when we're talking about the special teams in the sport, they don't stack up. They just don't stack up. And I think it's really, really funny too. And I got into an argument off the air with Andy about this, but Ohio State played a close game against Nebraska last week, right? So everybody will say, hey, you know what? Ohio State might not be as good as we think they are. They almost lost to Nebraska. That's a big red flag. But it's like how many people who ranked Michigan State number three the week before consider that they almost lost to Nebraska? They don't, because we're so starved for wanting something different in the playoff every year that we want to make fetch happen. And it's just like, it's just not the case.
Well, alternatively, whatever. What is Ohio State this year? Like, if you went in not knowing Ohio State's recent history, you didn't know Chris Olave's career, you didn't know CJ Stroud's recruiting ranking, you didn't know Ryan Day's track record as an offensive play caller, you're just like, I have landed
here from
Neptune.
Do you not know NFL draft projections?
Right, you don't know any of this. You just landed from Neptune, you're familiar with college football, and you just watch Ohio State football. Would you think this is a crazy good team? Or would you think this is a flawed team that has some interesting players now that I'm watching it? Like, what actually is, in a vacuum, Ohio State this year?
What because, you like, just said. They're a flawed team with interesting players.
What are the flaws to you, and how did they come to be?
Their defensive personnel isn't to the standard that it has been in years past. And they discovered a running back who's now a linebacker named Steel Chambers, who is now playing with some intensity, but their linebackers are inherently slow. They've suffered some major injuries in the back end of their defense, and their entire defensive philosophy that got them blown off the field against Alabama inexplicably was unchanged until they lost to Oregon. And they did a completely revamped defensive strategy now that has put them in a position where they can win. But the thing that I think about Ohio State is they are an inherently flawed team, but they are one of the three or four teams that, if they put it together, can beat anybody in the country. Whereas Michigan State, on a day where they put it all together, might still lose. And I think that that has to matter. So, like, but on a day that Oregon puts it together, and like, listen, I know you're an Oregon guy.
Yeah.
What Mario Cristobal has been doing from a recruiting standpoint, they are starting to put themselves in a position where they are built the same way these other teams are. And if the last year's recruiting class is very good, you're getting five-star players out of Texas right now. Like, their classes have been really, really good. And I view, like, if Mario Cristobal were to ever leave Oregon, I think that'd be the dumbest thing in the world, because he is at a place that's got a great brand. It knows what it is. It can recruit nationally at a high level, which is a very hard thing to do. And it's in a very winnable conference, and they own that conference. And I hope, for their sake and for the Pac-12's sake, that they actually do it this year. But when you look at the NFL draft numbers, like, I don't think anybody can just land from Neptune, watch Ohio State, and not watch Chris Olave, Trey Henderson, their offensive line, and not just be like, oh my God, this team has so many good players. What are they going to do when it comes together? But at the same time, they should be penalized for sucking. I mean, they got their butts kicked by Oregon. They've almost lost a few games to teams that are marginally good. And you know what? If they lose again, it wouldn't be the most surprising thing in the world. But here's the thing about Ohio State, and the toughest thing about the sport, is that I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that Michigan, Michigan State, and Penn State cannot beat Alabama and Oregon. I mean, Alabama, maybe Oregon, and Georgia. I know beyond the shadow of a doubt those teams are not built from a physical
not
standpoint.
Not beat to build Oregon?
Oregon was an accident to put in there, but I don't think they'd beat Oregon either.
Okay. All right.
But I'm saying Alabama and Georgia are the two monsters of the sport this year. Maybe just Georgia by itself, because Alabama has shown it's inherently flawed the same way Ohio State is, right? Your life depends on it. You have to pick between Michigan State, Michigan, Ohio State, and any other team in the top 10 of the playoff rankings to go up and beat Georgia right now. Your life depends on it. Who are you taking? No one's taking Michigan State. Nobody. Nobody's taking Michigan.
No.
You take the team that is built to do it. And people go, well, the recruiting rankings aren't the playoff rankings. And I agree with that.
No, just take the best quarterback. Take the best quarterback. Yeah.
Would you take the best quarterback? Because I don't think C.J. Stroud is the best quarterback.
You don't think? No. C.J. Stroud's better than Cade McNamara. He's better than Anthony Brown. He's better than Peyton Thorne. He's better than Zach Calzada. Like, he's better than who's yeah. The top 10 quarterback that's better than CJ Stroud?
Maybe Caleb Williams.
Maybe
CJ Stroud is going to be very good. He's just not great yet. But my only point is that, like, I think the playoff committee ranks teams based on their perceived notions of who they are, based on all the information that they have. And why shouldn't that information be used? Why shouldn't recruiting rankings be used, or NFL draft projections, or the way a team's built? Because part of getting to the playoff and winning a national championship is obviously putting yourself in a position to win games. But a coach's job, which Dan Mullen doesn't know, 80% of it is assembling the roster that puts you in that position. So, of course, your roster and what you have on your team is being taken into account. You might not want to admit it, but every single time that committee walks into that room in Grapevine, Texas, they're looking at how those teams are made up.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used, because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Let's close the loop on the Ohio State-Purdue matchup. The line is about 20, 21, depends where you look, when you look. What is the Ari Wasserman pick there?
I would take, I think my official projection was a Purdue cover, and that Ohio State would win 42-24. That's my official, like, podcast media type. Like, you have to have a pick because, for whatever reason, sports writers have been viewed as prognosticators when our job is to write about what happened, not to tell you what's going to happen. I wouldn't bet this game in a million years. This is one of those games where Purdue could have the ball down 7 in the fourth quarter, or Purdue could lose 56-10. Because if Ohio State puts it together, like, it's like whenever I talk about gambling, you guys remember when the Warriors were just awesome, like 4 or 5 years ago? If you're a gambler, the Warriors didn't cover all their games, but it sure as hell was not very fun to bet against them, because you don't want to be on the bottom half of that avalanche, right? Like, Ohio State is the type of team that can score 28 points in a 6-minute period. And when that happens, you know, you're just wrong. But my official projection is this. Ohio State is flawed. They play offense like they don't know who they are. Their defense is suspect. Their coordinator's situation is weird after Oregon sent them into a tailspin. Their offensive line, despite having 3 first-round draft picks on it, isn't playing very well. They don't get the benefit of the doubt of they're going to win 56-10 until they actually win a game that way. So my opinion is Purdue has very good players at the top. I hope it'll be a fun game to watch. It might be close. They provide a situation that you don't really see in Ohio State regular season Big Ten games, which is having the 2 best players on the field, potentially. And I think that Purdue will make it an interesting game, at least into the third quarter.
By the way, the case against Purdue is it's very difficult to play lights out and to your absolute maximum 2 weeks in a row, right? That's the case that Purdue may simply be a pretty good team and play pretty good against Ohio State, and playing pretty good as the Boilermakers means you lose by 26.
Yeah, and that's the thing too, of just like winning at Iowa 24-7, biggest game of the year, right, for them?
Yeah.
Legitimizing win, next week getting your doors blown off by Wisconsin, a team that couldn't get a first down the week before. So, you know, this game is crazy. The sport is crazy. I want to believe in Purdue and what they've built. And the thing, too, that I've loved the most about Jeff Brohm is every year, it's like every other year. One year, this guy is stealing money for Purdue. How is he making this? Fire his ass right now. Get out of here. And then the next week, it's like, this guy is one of the best offensive minds in the entire world. Purdue was lucky to have. Every other year, like, the hot seat is fluctuating with him. But, like, yeah, I'm very excited to see if anybody can beat Georgia. I'm very excited to see how the cream rises to the top. The games are getting interesting, as they always do in November. And, you know, I am one final bullet point. Andy disagrees with me on this, but I hope you guys don't. When the playoff is a 12-team playoff and everybody gets in, it's going to really suck, I think. I'm not looking forward to that. Because
I am agreeing.
Dan agrees. I probably disagree with that. Yeah.
But it's just like, in this scenario, like, Ohio State is just going to get in every year then? Every year they lose 2 games, or they don't deserve to go to the playoff this year. But they're going to just waltz in no matter what. They're going to have a Florida-like season to not make the playoff.
So
gonna have, I was just going to say,
to me, the peak of the season is November. And to make January more pronounced, like, to me, and this is the question I was going to ask you, is just like, let's get away from any team even remotely in the playoff conversation. Just like, who does it for you? Who's good TV for you? And like, guess what? Miami, Florida State's probably going to be good TV this week.
Yes,
it has no
yes.
playoff implications. But guess what? Miami improved. Florida State, when they have Jordan Travis at quarterback, is an improved, interesting, explosive team. And there are games like that across the sport. Like, we're recording this on a Thursday, right? North Carolina's playing Pitt tonight.
I was just going to say, tonight is going to be a great game.
It has no playoff implication, but like, if we are funneling everything into a 12-team playoff, we're like, well, North Carolina Pitt doesn't really matter because these teams are not necessarily playing to win the ACC. I mean, I guess Pitt is on a certain level, but like the implication of tonight's game is if North Carolina wins, they're not going to, you know, win the ACC, so it doesn't matter. But there's so much in week 10, week 11, week 12, there's so much to the sport that when we get to 12 teams, we're just like, well, your margin for error is less.
And people are very fatigued by the repetitiveness of the current playoff system. Mm-hmm. Do people realize that the expansion of the playoff will absolutely and surely invite more teams in? But all you're doing is giving Ohio State, Georgia, and Alabama second and third chances in years where they're not good enough. And then at those teams, it's like the 2015 Ohio State team that I covered. That was one of the best teams I've ever seen in my entire life. They didn't make the playoff because they lost to Michigan State. They didn't deserve to go to the playoff that year because they lost the only game on their schedule that they couldn't lose.
But we do get matchups. We do get isolated matchups, right? We will get Baylor, Oregon. We will get Texas A&M, like matchups that we wouldn't necessarily, we'll get Texas A&M, Oklahoma, and like a weird Big 12 comeback kind of thing.
Yes.
Like, there is that, like, we get better vacuums, but not necessarily better big picture.
But the thing is, like, I don't know that people realize what they're asking for. You're going to get good matchups. There's going to be more games. I'm not saying it's not going to be fun and that we're not all going to love watching it. The thing is that I'm going to say is that when Alabama loses their weird game to Ole Miss in the years that they inexplicably have missed the playoff, you're letting them back in the hen house. And if they're getting it, Ohio State, Georgia, maybe if they continue to recruit the way they are, Ohio State and all the teams, Clemson, when they are who they are going to get second chances in seasons where they don't deserve it. And I'm talking about somebody who covered Ohio State for 10 years before taking my new job. That team's best teams never won the national championship because they lost inexplicably to teams in the middle of the year. And the thing that makes Ohio State's national championships special is that you have to be perfect to get there. And now it's just like, why does an Ohio State or an Alabama or Georgia fan even care about the regular season? There'll be a 2 or 3 loss team that's just going to get in at number 12, because if you look at the rankings right now, the 13th best team in the country is a 2-loss Baylor team, because that's what it's going to be then.
My co-host, Dan Rubenstein, has famously come out against the future version of the playoff, this version of the playoff. He's very much akin to the old bowl system. You know, that being, let's just make it exhibition games. We'll pick our favorite at the end. And at least we kind of have a different thing.
Set up an awesome January 1st.
Yeah, set up an awesome January 1st. Are you in that camp? Are you of the mindset that you would love to just abandon the playoff entirely? Are you of the mindset that 4 is good, that we need 4 with modifications, but not 12? Where do you stand in the, I guess, broader
discussion? 12 is too much. I think 12 is way too much. We all know in any given year that only 6 to 8 teams maximum are built to win a national championship. And that's not to say that the North Carolinas and the Pitt games of the world aren't fun, but they're not built to win a national championship. And whoever wins the ACC this year will not be a team that is built to win the national championship. I would do 8, and then I would do automatic bids for every Power 5 winner, even though the concept of Power 5 now is in question because we don't even know what the Big 12 is going to be. Automatic bids to make conference championships important. That, again, then emphasizes the importance of winning games. So when people say, why do we play the games? It all goes towards your conference. You have one automatic bid for the highest ranked group of 5 teams, so they're in the mix every single year. And then you have 2 at-large teams, like the second SEC team or the second team in another conference that's really, really good that didn't win because of a technicality or whatever, and you just roll with 8. Now, that doubles the thing. You're still going to wonder, we're going to have arguments about who the 2 at-large teams are going to be. But like, to me, emphasizing conference championships then makes the entire run of it more fun. You play the non-conference games to enhance your resume just in case you want to be one of the at-large teams. And then the group of 5 is in the mix and then everybody wins. Everybody has a chance to win their conference. Everybody has a chance to do it the way where the committee is completely removed from the discussion. And then you have a 12 or 13 person committee to do at-large rankings every week. And then the 2 highest ranked teams in the rankings at the end of the year that didn't win their conference outside of the group of 5 go. And I think that would be good.
I agree. And then obviously the SEC and the Big Ten don't want that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why anybody wouldn't want that. I think the SEC's goal is to have 19 teams in their 12-team playoff. You know, and I understand that the SEC, anybody who watches football knows that the SEC has the most teams and the most candidates that are at least built to do it. And, you know, as you look at the recruiting rankings and the way things are going right now, like Texas A&M is on their way. Like, if you're watching what they're doing right now, they're going to have stacked rosters. Georgia's is what it is. Alabama, LSU, when things are working. I mean, they've got teams that are, you know, when I say quote unquote built to, that might frustrate a Michigan State fan. But like in the SEC, that, like, I always use this example, like Tennessee 2 years ago signed a top 10 class in the country in their recruiting class, and they were the seventh best in their own conference. So like there is a concentration of elite teams in that. So like I understand they probably want more at large bids, but like, do Ohio State fans care about winning the Big Ten? Like, has that been stripped of like an accomplishment?
Sure. Yeah, of course it has.
I think that winning your conference should mean something. And the winning of your conference meaning something takes away the subjectivity of what other people in a boardroom think. You get to settle it on the field by winning your conference. You hoist up your conference trophy, and then you automatically get a chance to play for a national championship as a pod. And I know that's more like an NFL system, because there's a clear and defined way of making the playoff in professional leagues, and the subjectivity of college sports makes it more fun. But I also think that it leaves enough on the table for the two at-large teams to be debated. You have a group of five flavor in there to make it more exciting. And at the same time, everybody had her fair shake at it.
What is the prestige of a conference, right? Like, it's a group of teams that sell a TV contract. Like, so many rivalries have disappeared, and the Big Ten is like, well, let's add Rutgers and Maryland, which did nothing for the conference. In terms of anybody in San Diego or in, you know, Amarillo, Texas, like, why do you care about the Big Ten anymore because Maryland and Rutgers are there? Why do you care about the ACC anymore because Boston College and Syracuse are there? Why do you care? Like, Texas and Oklahoma didn't care about their conference, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't important to them to be in the Big 12.
And that's like, the reason why my idea is probably crap, because now... Is Power Five even a thing anymore? Like, are we right. Viewing the Big 12 as a power conference?
No, we're going to have Fox and ESPN conferences. It's all going to be AFC, NFC. Yeah.
The thing about college football and the thing that sucks about this conference expansion, fans don't like it. Reporters don't like it. I mean, I guess some people like theorizing about what it's going to look like.
Right.
The conferences used to be a collection of geographical. You know, used to have a connection to the land. You know what I mean? Like, if you were in the Big Ten, you were a Midwestern team. If you were an SEC team, you were in the South, and so on and so forth. And it's like now, like, Oklahoma is in the SEC, and it's just like, I guess they kind of fit in, but they're not in the Oklahoma's not in the South.
Oklahoma's going to be playing South Carolina.
Like, is Maryland in the Midwest? Like, I understand. And now that the conference situations are getting murky, where conferences are disbanding or expanding and teams are going from here to there, like, now the current makeup of the SEC that includes Texas and Oklahoma, it'd be insane to only give them one spot because they have half the good teams in the country in their conference. So like, I like the playoff because it gives us big time matchups that we wouldn't otherwise see. I want to see Oklahoma play LSU. I want to see Clemson play Ohio State. Like, if there was no playoff, that would never happen in a game with some meaning to it. But I also just don't know what the perfect way to do it is. I just know that if you start inviting the 12th best team in the country, it's just going to be a lot more blowouts. You're just giving the best teams a second chance in seasons where they're supposed to be ruined by upsets. And the same teams are going to win it still. And it's just going to be like a collection of second chance scenarios for teams that should have otherwise been disqualified.
See,
the reason why fans rush the field when things happen, or the reason why we all are glued to the television every single time we're on upset alert, is because there are consequences for the loss. And if you add a 12 team system, then we're removing consequences for losing.
When you said, what does Ohio State care about winning the Big Ten? Totally agree. I just don't think the point of Ohio State football is to beat Alabama. I'm always going to be of the mind that, and you can apply this to anybody, the point of Ohio State football is to beat Michigan and Michigan State and Penn State.
It used to be,
right? But I still think if you're an Ohio State fan, by and large, that's what gets you the most worked up. Beating those teams and avoiding losing to those teams.
I would push back on that 150%.
Really?
Well, I mean, I think you're right. Like, in general, you're right. Ohio State playing Clemson last year after the way that they lost the year before and getting blown out in the playoff, there was more built up testosterone going into that game to play Clemson than there ever was in a Michigan game for the past 15 years.
Right. But that's on Michigan, right? Like, if Michigan is good, it's more valuable to me as somebody who's not associated with Ohio State, and I have no Ohio State fan. But I'm saying, like, Ohio State, that the 1-2 game when it was 2006, I want to say.
Yeah.
That's a bigger game than any
biggest
Alabama
game ever. I agree.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it's on Michigan why that game doesn't happen more often, that they're not like numbers 3 and 5, although they might be this year. That's a more important part of college football to
me.
But
it's evolving. It's evolving, though.
It's totally evolving. And as I get older, my takes are going to be that of an old man. I get that. I totally get that. And everybody is loyal to why they started liking the sport initially. But if you're Ty, I think Ty would love for Notre Dame to beat a top five USC more so than beating a random team in, I don't know if it's the playoff, a non-playoff, whatever. This is where my "it just means more" thing comes in.
Ty, I'm going to ask you this directly, and this is a lie detector test moment. Look at me in the eyes, buddy.
Okay.
Would you rather Notre Dame beat Alabama or USC ranked in the top five next year?
I would rather Alabama.
That's college football now. And like it's not anymore. And the thing that I'm a little bit worried about with the playoff system is, and people don't talk about this very much, but I'm obsessed with it, is the perpetual results of recruiting rankings are becoming more and more lopsided. Mm-hmm. And I think it's coinciding with the teams that are most visible in the playoff every year.
Of course.
And I'm wondering, like you say, well, that's on Michigan. And I wonder if Michigan and Ohio State being on even footing is a thing in the permanent past now. Because Ohio State is recruiting at a certain level based on their visibility in the playoff that didn't necessarily exist before its existence. And then now Michigan is behind the eight ball permanently and against a natural rival where it was a 50-50 coin flip every year.
I don't think there's anything permanent. I don't think there's anything permanent about a place as big as Michigan, about a brand as large as Michigan. I think the right person can recruit on a crazy level because there is nothing special about Columbus, Ohio that isn't.
You can actually make the case that Ann Arbor is better.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm saying, like, the location of Ohio State and the history of Ohio State is not appreciably different than Notre Dame, than Michigan, than all of those places. Ohio State's just been better at doing it.
Yeah. I also think that the conditions between those two programs have changed in terms of what the expectations are. And coaches don't get fired for not winning. They get fired for not meeting those expectations. And like right now, Michigan's entire program has recalibrated its expectations to 10-2. Whereas 5 years ago, losing to Ohio State was inexcusable. Now, in a year where they're in the top 10 of the playoff, if they beat Penn State this weekend and then lose to Ohio State by 20 or 14, that will be a successful year, where that wasn't the case. And I think as we continue to ease into that normality, then one is a blue blood that's completely high on the stock market rankings, and one team just has given up the idea of holding up their end of the bargain, which is something I've been screaming about and writing about for the past 5 years, but it's happening in front of our eyes. So like, will Michigan ever beat Ohio State again? Sure, I'm sure it's going to happen at some point. But Ohio State is built like Alabama. Michigan State, Penn State, and Michigan are all built like those teams I just mentioned. There is a stark difference between those two things, and I think the playoffs' existence kind of helped exasperate what we're seeing between those differences.
Is it good though that we're only talking about five teams this entire show? Is it good that we've de-emphasized the totality of the sport?
No. I know, but like it's just like also in 2005 when the BCS was at its height. I mean, were we talking about the 17th ranked team on the show? Like, I mean, even in a time where there was only one national championship game, you know, the teams that are in this discussion now were still teams that expected to win the national championship then. And, you know, man, I was up on Wednesday night watching Maction. I was enjoying it.
Hell yeah.
It's fun. Just because those teams aren't in the national championship race doesn't mean that we're not consuming it and enjoying it. But as it pertains to...
Do you write about NIU? Do you write about Kent State?
Do you
write about any of those teams? Yeah.
But it's not because they're not in the playoff discussion. It's because their fan bases aren't big enough to care. It's the same thing that people, it's the same reason why we don't have a writer for the Arizona State junior colleges, because there aren't enough fans to consume the information. Trust me, if there was a rabid NIU fan base that was hungry for coverage of their, not every team at The Athletic that has a beat writer is a national, we had a South Carolina writer last year. They're not winning national championships. I think that what we write about is catering to the interest in what we're writing about and not vice versa.
So what do we do? What do we do if Ari Wasserman, you are put in charge tomorrow of the college football parody, college football rebalancing committee? I'm making this up as I go. What are you doing to try and promote college football, the pageantry of college football, and not just the pageantry of like seven teams that could potentially win it every year?
I know, but do we not watch what happened against in the Tennessee game a few weeks ago when they were going crazy in Knoxville? Do we not watch the games? Like, I am a playoff obsessed recruiting person who will yell about recruiting rankings until I'm blue in the face. And I'm watching every game I can. And like, I don't know that in 2021, when there's a playoff, that the sport is any inherently different than it was back then. I mean, there's always been have and have nots, right? There's always been blue bloods and teams that want to beat them. I mean, it's not like, I think that there's like this idea that we're craving that the NFL, where you can be the Cleveland Browns and you can stink for 20 years. And then one year you sign or Nick Chubb is a hit. You have Myles Garrett. And then all of a sudden your team is a playoff team. And it's just like, college football was fine and is fine the way it is. And like, fans of Iowa are excited to see if their team can reach the expectations that are in line with the expectations of their program. And that's not a national championship. Whereas LSU, they want to win a national title. And it's like, I just don't know that I buy that it's much different than when we were kids. There's just more fun games at the end of the year. And I think a more pure champion, because I think winning a conference championship, winning a semifinal, and then winning a national title is a hell of a lot harder than waltzing your way into the BCS game and winning one off game. You know, I think it's more entertaining. But the thing I don't know is, and this is where I think the nuts and bolts of the whole problem are, and I think you guys would agree with this, it's a recruiting problem. The recruiting numbers are lopsided. If you go look at Georgia's class right now, they've got 15 top five or top 100 players that they're going to sign this year. And like, teams 10 through 30 might have a combined 15 total. You know what I mean? Like, there's a wealth of talent. Like, Ohio State's receiver room, I think, I read this stat, had like seven or eight top 100 players in there, and the rest of the Big Ten combined at every position only had like 10. So like, there's like a top heaviness to the type of players that are on certain rosters. And I don't know what the answer is to help get that talent more dispersed. Is it you can't do a cap on stars because that's objective? You can't do a cap on coaching salaries because that's an antitrust law violation. Like, there's like, I don't know what the actual solution is, because the cool kids are just the cool kids. But as long as the sport's always been top heavy, but as long as the recruiting rankings are as top heavy as they are right now, where Ohio, like, I think I said this stat on the show, but I think 68 of the top 100 players in the country last year, so almost a third, or two-thirds of the top 100 went to five schools. And then everything else is everybody gets the scraps. And it's like, those five schools are LSU, Clemson, Ohio State, Georgia, and I think Oklahoma. And it's like, okay, well, those are the teams that are in the playoff every year.
The big thing is, to become one of those schools, you need to happen to be located in one of like three parts of the country. And also, you need not just commitment in terms of money, because you have to match not just facilities, but like, what, support staff, recruiting, travel budget. You need to invest in so many different parts of your program. You need to invest in coaches. You need to invest in assistant pools. And the big thing is, you need to invest in time, right? It takes a lot of time to become even a pseudo blue blood, right? How long did it take Oregon, right? Oregon invested at first in 1995, building an indoor facility, then the uniforms at the end of the 90s. Like, it didn't happen overnight. So like, In an arbitrary situation, I don't know, Iowa, Boston College, Texas Tech, whatever, any of these places that just are so behind because of not being good for a long time and not investing for a long time, it takes serious patience and serious cash. And if you're Iowa, why do you risk 8-win seasons if that's bringing in money and you're going to bowl games every year in pursuit of 11-game seasons that you don't know if it's going to happen, and you're going to spend a ton of money and spend a time hoping it happens? So you're just going to be happy with 8 wins a year and go from there. And there's just nobody who has the kind of time or money capital to take that kind of chance.
But it has happened. Oregon did it. Clemson
with
did it.
With an extremely unique situation. Clemson's in the right place. Oregon has the right booster.
So why? So, and this is the thing, though. It's just like if you're Washington State or Oregon State or Syracuse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you have terrible geography as it pertains to acquiring talent. Why are we discussing how to cater to them? Like, they are not in a place where they want to spend the money. And if you're a program like Iowa, for instance, not that this is true, but this is the example you used.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't want to rock the boat and mess up their 8-win seasons because they don't know if they're ever going to get to 11, why does catering to the way that we do the national championship race ever going to, why are they going to matter before or after we make a change? If we revert back to the BCS,
right?
Iowa's mindset doesn't change. They don't change locations from Iowa City to Nashville or somewhere that's near talent. So
we're not catering to them, but what we're saying is these five or six teams who have separated themselves in terms of talent acquisition, they're not the sole focus of the sport.
Right? So there's no playoff show, there's no discussion, but like even back in the BCS era, college football final, what do they talk about? Here's what we expect from the BCS, and here's the numbers that we're going to, here's the simulation of what the computer is going to spit out. There is an obsession with who's the best team and who's going to win the national championship.
Sure.
But I understand too, like Iowa was in the playoff discussion this year.
Mm-hmm.
So like Washington State has been in the playoff discussion, believe
it. Yeah, Washington State's won a Rose Bowl.
Yeah, I feel like all these teams, like Mississippi State was number one in the playoff rankings one year.
Right.
Like, being in the discussion on this show, like, I know Michigan State and Michigan have higher aspirations than being mentioned, but we're talking about Baylor on the show. I mean, we're talking about Notre Dame, Cincinnati, Alabama, Michigan State, Oklahoma, you know, and then the teams in like Purdue, who's in the 19. We talked about Purdue on the show today.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about teams. It's not just the Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia, Clemson show.
But within the context of them being cannon fodder.
I wish this show would go on for 3 hours. I love talking
about it. Same. Yeah, I mean, it could go on forever, right? This is the topic of debate in college football, that competitive imbalance. The NCAA came out with a draft of its new constitution earlier in the week. It seems as if they're taking a different approach, right? At least a different proposed approach into how they see themselves fitting into this new era of college sports. It seemingly paves the way for more autonomy by member institutions to perhaps even break away and start different divisions. You know, this, I think, is a huge X factor looking forward, because you're right, Ari. We are in a position where we're talking about the same 10 teams every year. Is that good? Is that bad? You could probably argue on both sides of it. But if we have a Super League type of situation 20 years from now, where we've got 12 teams that qualify, that, you know, there are ways that they could potentially remake the sport to keep it interesting on a number of different levels.
Well, the thing that I don't know is that we have all these different ideas of super leagues and conferences and playoff structures and how many teams go, and the fundamental problems with the programs that aren't being spoken about enough are all the ones that Dan just mentioned. It's booster buy-in, it's administration's commitment to building an indoor facility, to maximizing their recruiting budget, and to actually invest in your program. And I know that there's more money, and like by joining conferences and TV deals, there's more an influx of cash into programs, which can make all the difference in the world. But you can't fix geography, you can't fix fan interest, and you can't fix where the prospects are going based on the rules that we're trying to change or move in place. So, and it's always been this way.
And there's a lot that's static. And look, I know that this has been mentioned time and again, but in some future state, if they were able to enact some sort of relegation or promotion system, that would make things interesting.
I would be into that.
I think
I just like, what does that mean financially, though? Like, if you get relegated to a lower league.
But look, like your Iowa example, we could take Iowa. Does Iowa want to make a run at that top branch, at that top chunk of college football? If they want to do that, then they've got to invest heavily, because it's not going to come cheaply in order to be in that group of 20 or 15 or whatever.
And that's the thing that I always say about Michigan. I don't understand why Michigan isn't approaching or demanding that. They've got more money than any of these other teams, or just as much money as any of these other teams. They have a rabid fan base. They're in a same environment from a geographical standpoint as Ohio State. and the administration and the fans to a certain extent have accepted being second fiddle to Ohio State when they have the uniforms, the facilities, the location, the conference, the TV deal. They've got everything that Ohio State has, and there's no reason why they should be second place. And it's just like, to me, I think that it's up to the administration to hire the right coach or to fire the coach or to invest in the recruiting budget or to do the things that they need to do in order to get to that place. And I'm less interested in what fundamental changes we can make to the sport. And I'm more interested in making sure that the teams that are in the position to invest in their programs do that. Because I do feel like to a certain extent, there are certain teams that I feel bad for. Like, I don't know that there's anything that anybody at Syracuse could ever do to help them win a national championship in football. So like changing the system or discussing or exploring ideas to the change of that system, Syracuse is still going to be Syracuse because they're up in upstate New York. There's no talent up there. And you got to get somebody to come take an official visit in the middle of the winter into a snowish hellstorm. And it's just far away. And it's just like that is their reality. But for the teams that are kind of on the precipice of it, like the Iowas, the Michigans, you know, like what Clemson did, you know, let their administrations and their fans dictate the expectations for their programs. And if you invest in your program, you will see a moderate improvement. And I think that's completely independent from the system that we create. And that's my opinion. Maybe that's naive. But that's kind of like the way I view this whole thing. So, you know, there are so many different factors when it comes to how you can do that. But like Clemson is the perfect example. If Dabo got hired today, and then he had the first 5 years of his run at Clemson, would he be fired? It's like Clemson gave him the money, the time, and they had an understanding of this is what needs to be done from a recruiting standpoint to build something. And then year, was it 7 or 8? It finally broke through. And I know he had a 10-win season early on in his career, but like Clemson was a good program, but not an elite blue blood.
Right.
Maybe blue blood is not the right word because you have to be a blue. It's like being in a gang, historic, right? Get indoctrinated in. But they are in the discussion with the Alabamas of the world. 2 years ago, they were the top program in college football. And they did that from sweat equity, from their head coach that they gave time to actually see through his vision. And they did it. It can be done. And I get that they're in South Carolina and they're probably a little bit closer to some teams. But like, so is South Carolina. And they're nowhere near that. So like, you know, Ohio State doesn't have great geography. They've got great history and an NFL draft record that makes people want to go there. I think that Arizona State, teams near California, all the teams in the Big 12 that have access to Texas, I think that you could make the case, like even a team like Iowa or Iowa State, they have access to Texas and the Midwest. I think that every team in the Power 5, 90% of the teams in the Power 5, if you take out Oregon State, Washington State, Syracuse, and maybe a few others like Kansas, have the ability to do what other teams are doing if they dedicated themselves to doing it. And changing the playoff system to cater to the second tier teams of the world so that they can hang a banner that says we made the playoff 1 year because of circumstance is not what I'm interested in. I'm interested in defining who the best team is, taking out some of the subjectivity of how we define who those best teams that compete for it are, and then watching them compete on the field to see who wins it.
Final question. You host a show called Stars Matter, I believe, a podcast called Stars Matter about recruiting and the ramifications thereof. Evaluate your strengths and weaknesses as a father through the lens of a recruiting prospect. I want, you know, first of all, conclude with your star rating as a young father, because how old is your daughter now?
We're almost 6 weeks in.
6 weeks in. Okay. So you've had time. You've had a little bit of a rhythm. Give me strengths and weaknesses. Leave your wife out of it. Leave the mother out of it. Leave the fiance out of it. Just give me you, Ari Wasserman, as a strength and weakness evaluation.
I think I'm a low tier 3-star.
Okay.
Or at least was at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had my issues. You know, when she was first here, she would cry in the middle of the night and I would like not hear it and just keep sleeping.
All right. So awareness, head was not on a swivel. IQ, not there. Pocket awareness,
deep,
not there.
I'm a very, very deep sleeper. Uh-huh. And like, I think it's because I knew Britt was next to me that like I was able to like subconsciously like be like, this is on you right now. Like I'm not waking up. Mm-hmm. So I've since fixed the problem. We have the baby monitor. Whenever the baby cries, I wake up. I'm not a bad person. But it took an adjustment period of I was constantly worried for the first month that I was going to mess something up.
Sure.
And I don't know if that's typical, but I was afraid to hold her for long periods or to walk up and down the stairs with her in my arms or making the formula or everything that you have to do with a baby. I was afraid I was going to do it wrong.
Right.
So after a month of reading the books and following taking care of babies on Instagram and trips to the store and hiring a nanny that helps in the doula. I don't even know what these words meant. You know what a doula is?
I do. But yeah,
we had some woman come into our house. Yeah. Four times she came over and she taught us how to clean the bottles and to do everything. She taught me how to be a parent.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
And it was kind of reasonably priced.
It's your
for what
Steve
it was.
Clarkson. It's your private tutor. Yeah.
Yeah. So what I think I am is the 3-star prospect who had the potential, who went to Michigan State and turned into a 2nd-round draft pick in year 4.
Look at you.
So like to me, like the Mark D'Antonio linebacker.
Okay. So I'm trying to think of like who is the quintessential. There was a guy named Max. God, what was his last name?
It started with a B.
Max Bulla.
Max Bulla, that's right.
Yes. Was,
that's me. You know, okay. or like, you know what, man? Maybe not linebacker. I'm Connor Cook.
You're Connor Cook. You're efficient, not flashy. You get the job done. You're actually probably underrated when you look back on it and in fathers since. Okay. I think Connor Cook is a good one.
I mean, everybody thinks they're a great father. I would walk in front of traffic for my baby.
Of course.
I love her very much. I have hours of time where I'm just staring at her, you know, like in disbelief of everything that's happened in my life in such a short period of time. But, you know, you do see like these super fathers that have like the front facing backpack who like change every diaper and know everything and have all like I'm not like one of those crazy people.
You'll get there. The front facing pack is great.
Yeah, I do change the majority of the diapers because it doesn't gross me out.
Dan, do you have a front-facing backpack?
Of course I do.
Dan does, and I have one. I haven't worn it yet, but like we're now in the stage where we're not freaking out. We're taking her to like coffee shops and walks in the stroller and, you know, getting out there, and I feel like we're easing into it a little bit, you know? And I was in a constant state of being terrified for the first month, and now after, you know, the first month going into the 6 weeks period, I feel like I'm starting to settle in and enjoy it a little bit.
Diapers are great, by the way. Diapers are underrated. Diapers are a good time.
Changing it's not that
diapers,
bad.
It's fine.
I don't know if they, as they get older, it's worse, but like our baby only weighs at 7 pounds and there's like, it's like, it takes 30 seconds.
It takes 30 seconds. You have a captive audience for your goofs and your silly sounds. It's
yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Fatherhood, underrated.
There are times, and I'm sure I'll grow out of this, but like it has hit me. The hardest thing, and I'll tell this to Britt, to her face, so don't think I'm a bad person. But when I left Columbus and I took this promotion at The Athletic that allowed me to move to Dallas and be near Brittany, the hardest thing about the adjustment period of that relationship was that I had to come to terms with the idea of I can never do what I want to do without at least having a discussion about it. When I was in Ohio, if I wanted to go play poker from 10 a.m. to 5 a.m. on a weeknight, I could just get in my car and go and not have to talk about it with anybody. So like my sense of freedom as a bachelor was gone. And it's not that she would say no or have a problem, but you have to at least respect your partner enough to inform them of what you want to do. And it might not work with their schedule. It took me about 6 months to kind of like get into the groove of that. Like if I go somewhere, she has to know about it. You know, not sounding in a creepy way, just in a loving, you know, partnership way.
When I believe the great Tom DeLonge would say, I guess this is growing up.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
But there are also people who make a ton of money and are bachelors forever and do whatever they want on their own terms their entire lives, and they're fine. And like there was probably a point in time where I thought, if I just covered college football and drove all around the country and went to casinos and gambled on football and my biggest responsibility was making my rent, like that wouldn't be too bad of a life either. Mm. You know? And of course, now
I think you'd get sick of it. I think you'd get sick of it.
Yeah. I mean, of course, when you're a single guy, you always want to meet somebody and settle down.
Yep.
But there was a moment in time while it was, I think, the day of the Michigan State Michigan game, where I woke up that morning. We went on a walk with the baby and we got coffee and did all the things. And I wanted to come home an hour before the kickoffs, look at the betting lines, get my bets in. I wanted to like get the TV set up. And like this baby, like Britt had to go do something. This baby was crying like crazy for no apparent reason. And I think that's the hardest thing about parenthood. When your baby is crying and you can't figure out why.
Yep.
That's a really hard thing to swallow. But I had a moment in time where I thought to myself, I am never going to get to do what I want to do when I want to do it on my terms ever again. And that was like a really crappy feeling, you know? And I'm not trying to be down about it, but like, their parenthood is the greatest thing that I've ever done. I love that baby more than I love myself. I love Brittany more than I love myself. I'm so blessed and so happy. But there are some emotional growth spurts that you have to go through.
Ty, don't
beginning.
You cut any of this. No, yeah. This is staying in.
Yeah.
This is staying in. Yeah.
And like everybody always just says, it's going to be great. You're going to do great. Nothing's going to go wrong. And you're going to be awesome at it. And it's just like, there does take some personal maturation and to understand that now you live for something that's bigger than you. And, you know, and I'm there and I'm happy and I'm so excited. But like, I did have moments.
I can tell you this, as for not knowing the pain of not knowing why your child is upset, you're going to go from not knowing to what I experienced earlier today, which was my son becoming very upset. And I went downstairs where he was eating and my wife was there and I was like, what happened? What's wrong? I was like, he was really upset because his tater tot broke. And I was like, okay, I'd rather just not know. I'd rather just not know that my son is emotional over his tater tot breaking in half.
The thing, too, that you have to adjust to, and I'm sure you know this, obviously, but when you first bring the baby home, when they cry, it is such a terrifying thing of like, oh, my God, what happened? What do we have to do? We got to make sure she stops crying. And like now that she's 6 weeks old and I'm used to it, it's just like all her crying is her just saying, come check on me. And like, I don't have this like fire alarm. Like if she's crying, I don't have this panic or, you know, not something terrible's not happening. It's just, she's communicating that, hey, I went to the bathroom or I'm hungry or I'm cold or one of the five things that it could possibly be. You fix it, you lay her back down, you rock her, you hold her, and then you're fine. You know, I'm happy that I'm not walking around on pins and needles anymore.
Same. It's pretty great.
Was that raw? Was that too raw? Was that too real?
No, that was great. I think we're going to launch a dad podcast. You and I. Maybe you could just call me anytime you want to talk about.
Yeah,
you.
I will say, Dan, you have been amongst the most supportive dads. Yeah, because like you text me all the time. How are you doing? I got the best onesie in the history of the planet.
That is a good
Valley
one.
Circle Pizza, who I think we're probably going to throw it on here in the next week because she's big enough now.
Love it.
But it's just like such a weird thing to just go from single dude to responsible for a life.
Yeah.
And it's been 99% great, but anybody who's experienced this or will experience it should know that there is some stuff that you got to get through.
Well, folks, we covered some ground here.
I love the show, guys. I'm happy that you had me on. It means a lot.
Oh, God.
Me.
From all things playoff to competitive balance or imbalance to fatherhood, Ari, it is always a pleasure to have you on. We will do it again soon. We apologize. It took us until November 11th to have you back on. But
it's crunch time now. I take it as a compliment.
I really want to do an Ask Us Anything with Ari on the Discord channel where he just asks our community questions about home maintenance. We're just like, all right, I've got 17 questions. And we've got a bunch of people.
The best thing about this is that I don't have to do anything anymore.
That's true.
You're done. I think we're basically there now. We have, like, for instance, the handle on our bedroom door is falling off. Mm-hmm. I've got to figure out how to tighten that.
Yeah, you're going to have to replace air filters. There are stuff to do.
I've done
that.
That's easy. Anybody can do that.
Okay. Look at you.
Ari Wasserman of The Athletic, national college football reporter. Great friend of the show. We appreciate your time as always.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
All right, Dan, Ari Wasserman, a lot to say as per usual. Great friend of the Solid Verbal. It's a pleasure to have him on talking college football, talking life. Talk in front facing dad backpacks.
Yeah, I've got lots of thoughts. Maybe here's what we're going to do. I think I'm going to take more advantage of Ari Wasserman's generosity with his time. And I'm just going to do like weird off-season 3-hour live streams about dad products and dad issues with Ari because he's so generous with his time and he has so many strong thoughts.
He does.
Instead of putting out hour and 24 minute episodes of the Solid Verbal on random Fridays that, you know, people are going to listen to for a day before the next week. Maybe that's the solution. Maybe we're going to become the ultimate dad Twitch streamers.
We would encourage you all, please go on out and follow the show on Apple Podcasts. Go to solidgiveaway.com if you want to throw your hat in the ring for a chance to win an RG3 signed mini helmet. You can also go on out to solidsaturday.com. Many of you are listening to this on a Friday, as you said, yes. Dan. Saturday mornings, 11 a.m. Eastern time, Dan and I do a live stream for an hour before a kickoff that is on our YouTube channel. Oh, while you're there, don't forget to hit subscribe and the bell. And last but certainly not least, verballers.com. Verballers.com is the Patreon. Verballers.com is where you can get this show, all of our shows a little bit early. You get access to the aforementioned Discord server, in addition to all the other bonuses and perks that we offer that esteemed community of Solid Verbal patrons, Dan.
I have nothing to add. That was a wonderful time that I just had.
For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for our guest of honor today, the one, the only, the distinguished Ari Wasserman. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. We will talk to you all after week 11. Enjoy your weekend and stay solid.
Peace.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Takeoff 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.